Welcome to Sunday's Here with Kevin Clark. I am Kevin Clark, joined on a Wednesday evening. I am in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I got a Wawa sandwich. The TV in my hotel doesn't work, and that's a good sign that it's tomorrow's the last day of my camp tour. Hello, Lindsay.
Hi, Kevin. Glad to hear you're almost home. I am home, fresh off the Taylor Swift concert, which is why I sound like I screamed for, 4 to 5 hours. So we're doing great is what I'm saying.
I think we might be the last Ringer podcast to be infiltrated by Taylor Swift talk, but can you give us like 30 seconds on it? We're the last holdout.
Yeah, fantastic show. The loudest I've ever heard SoFi Stadium. She had like a 8+ minute ovation in the middle of the show where there's no other sound. I mean, there's no music. It's just the crowd yelling, and the Chargers and Rams could only dream of.
I was going to say, so the Chargers don't have loud fans.
It's not exactly what I'm saying, but it is a little. I mean, look, like we were at a Super Bowl there. I've been at an NFC Championship game there, and the Niners fans tried their damnedest to make it very, very loud there. But Taylor Swift made it full and crazy and fun in ways that the NFL can only hope to achieve.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
We are going to talk about the Los Angeles Chargers a little bit later, not their fans, their coach. I am fresh off 2 days in suburban Virginia for Commander's camp. I don't know if we want to start with the Rivera Bieniemy dust up, but I want to say something before I get into Rivera, and these are his words, putting his foot in his mouth. Commander's camp is amazing. Like, I've never seen any energy at all at anything to do with the Commanders. I've been covering this league for a decade, okay? And there was a buzz when they got RG3 and they had Mike Shanahan, and I went to that camp, and I remember talking to Kirk Cousins there and all that stuff. There was something there, but it still felt tainted by Dan Snyder. And then everything got progressively worse from there, obviously. And what I think happened is eventually everything stopped being about football, and there were two prongs to that. Number one is every decision, none of them were well thought out, became sort of just, it was just retconning the desperate whims to justify the desperate whims of a tyrant, right? Like that's what that was. Okay. That's number one. And then number two, any momentum that they had on the football side that was really just kind of incidental was stunted by the fact that everyone assumed that they would screw it up. Right. And so like, if I'm making this up, but like if they'd taken Patrick Mahomes a few years ago, I think even in year two, when he looked like the best player in the world, they would have said, Snyder's going to screw it up. And then, by the way, he would have screwed it up. Somehow he would have screwed it up. And so the hope that was there, Mitch Rales, who's the number two owner, number three, I'm not sure where Magic is on that totem pole, but he was at practice today, and people were just screaming like, thank you for saving us. And what's funny is that like the on-field product is not much different. Like, this team is not going to be very good. They're going to win 7 games. But once you step literally 1 inch off of the white line and get to the sideline, there's a real honest to God energy. And I think that there's, I loved seeing it. There were a ton of people there today, which, by the way, is a product of the fact that they added stands and they no longer have a crazy lottery system, which was put in by the old regime, which limited people being in there to begin with. So there would have been more people on a normal day in the previous years if they didn't have a poorly thought out plan, which, by the way, the entire franchise was a poorly thought out plan. But I just, I before I get to the Rivera thing, I just want to say it is, I love that market for football. I am so happy, like, my family members who love that team, I've not checked in with them, but, like, every family with a connection to DC is so much happier than they used to be, and I just think that's awesome.
Well, first of all, you should probably call your family. Second of all, yeah, they've been one of the most fun kind of, and, like, weird training camps to follow, and I think we've talked about this a little bit, where there's a little bit of dichotomy between, like, the really good off-field vibes and the I don't know what's going on football-wise in practice, in the locker room, as apparently we're going to talk about as Ron Rivera pulled back the curtain a little bit about what's going on within this new offense. But yeah, I mean, they deserve it. And I think things are going to start happening quickly in terms of, like, moving that organization forward in terms of stadium deals, in terms of, like, media, you know, just rebranding. I mean, not to, that's on the table, right? I mean, Magic has kind of come out and said that that's on the table. But I think a lot of the things that have just stalled, that have really been holding that franchise back, the stadium deal, biggest among them, now that Snyder is gone, those things are really going to start moving forward in a way that's going to be really, really positive for that organization.
The governor of Maryland was there today, Wednesday, and was just, like, begging for the team to come. And that's important because while it's not unusual for governors to say, please let this NFL team build a new stadium in our district, it is unusual as far as the Commanders go, because Daniel Snyder was so toxic.
It's unusual for that organization.
Yes. And so there's some jockeying between, obviously, Maryland, where it is now, Virginia, and DC, the district, and well, RFK's side. There's some weird is it FBI? The FBI and the Commanders land swap was floated at one point, whatever. But there's honest to God jockeying. And, like, that's, like, again, 31 other teams. Like, the Bears are trying to build a stadium, right? And, like, every mayor and county executive is saying to the Bears, hey, why don't you meet with us? That was not happening in DC at all. And now it is. And that's the most important thing. All right. So let's talk about Rivera v. I'm not really sure if you could say Bieniemy, or it's the players Bieniemy, or Ron versus the players, because I got a lot of conflicting reports here. So let's start from the top. So yesterday, Rivera unprompted basically says the players are struggling with certain things that Bieniemy has been doing in practice, his intensity, and that the players were, quote, a little concerned with Bieniemy's level of intensity, and they came to Rivera. He volunteered all of this information. This was not extracted from him. There was no CIA interrogation. They didn't do anything. Rivera just stood there and said, here's what's happening. So he comes out on Wednesday and says he put his foot in his mouth, has basically a statement where he says he loved the, quote, overall message that Bieniemy has had, and they have to learn to be comfortable when they're uncomfortable. Rivera says weird things to the media sometimes. Yeah. This is another example of that. Lindsay, we both know Ron Rivera. You want to take this where?
Oh, man. Well, I appreciate it. So I was, as I said, I was kind of traveling. I've been in and out. And so you were explaining to me some of the TikTok of this yesterday, because the first thing is I couldn't believe that he kind of just volunteered this information. Yes. Where he just said that there was, like, some sort of issue going on between his players and his very high profile new offensive coordinator. I was sure that that was one, like, it had originated as, like, a nugget in Peter King's notebook or something, and or a Pro Football Talk item that came from an agent or something. But no, the most notable part to me is that, like, Ron Rivera felt like he was going to talk about this. I know that the snowball effect from this is that it's all going to be about Eric Bieniemy and his coaching style and the way that he's interacting with players and the way that players are responding to him. And that can be a really, really tricky area to venture into because of everything that has happened with Eric Bieniemy, who he is, why he hasn't gotten jobs in the past. But I don't know. I mean, I'm still, like, really confused about why this all happened. And part of it, I think, is, as you, you and I talked about offline a little bit, is like, sometimes I think Ron Rivera just can't like help himself. Yes. Like he is a guy who like he's a talkative guy. He has very good relationships, but he does tend to sometimes say a little bit too much or a little bit the wrong thing. I mean, what was the last year when he said he didn't know about the playoff situation going on? Like that was kind of an embarrassing blunder where, you know, sometimes you just need to like have that filter on when you're at a microphone. But I don't know. Take me back through kind of what it was like being there, because I was listening to a lot of this from the outside, and I loved that you and our dear friend Steven Ruiz were also there today. For
maybe
all
that's, you think Rivera was nervous because he saw the fellas and he just started freelancing.
He was like, oh shit, the Ringer's here.
Are the Phillies working on a perfect game? Is that what I'm seeing here? Stay tuned on Thursday morning to find out. Some people get their baseball news now on a football podcast 12 hours earlier. All right. So I asked a bunch of people about this and I got all sorts of different answers. My feeling is that he was just sort of talking. He was just talking because he's honest to a fault and he says things he shouldn't and he likes to help out the media. And all of a sudden he has said too much. Now, every single media member gave Sean Payton so much grace and the benefit of the doubt. And they said, this is so calculated. He's sending a message. He's saying that he's setting up Russell Wilson, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, no, he's probably just talking. And guess what? There's going to be none of that benefit of the doubt with Ron Rivera, because guess what? He's doing the same thing Sean Payton's doing. He was asked a question and it's hot and it's 90 degrees and it's August 3rd or August 9th, you know, or August 15th, and you have no idea what's going on and it's the dog days of summer and you just say stuff. Coaches will do it next week too. The amount of times I'm walking with a coach and he'll just say something wild because it's day 14 of training camp or day 3 of training camp. It's a long list. It's a long list. And so I don't think that there were a couple of different theories going around Commanders camp. One was that he was trying to send a message to Bieniemy. Two was he was trying to send a message to the players. I don't think it was either of those things. I think Bieniemy, and I heard somebody say this today, you know, Bieniemy is a different type of coach. He comes from a different program. They won a lot in Kansas City. He's going to have high expectations. He was, I'll give you a good example. He was yelling at the guys yesterday to finish the drill, to run out a 7-on-7. So a guy gets tackled, the running back gets tackled in they're in shells or whatever. They're in pads, but they're not tackling the ground, obviously, but there's contact. And then Bieniemy says, finish the play. So then the running back would have to run an extra 15, 20 yards. I don't know. I've not seen enough Kansas City practice to know if they do that there, but they do it here. I don't see it very often. And that's the kind of thing where is the running back rolling his eyes and saying, I can't believe I have to run an extra 20 yards, which by the way, like we think it's, when I was at the Greenbrier watching the Browns a couple days ago, I happened to be on the sideline and they had to run some sprints because there was a fight. And you think when you watch NFL practice, I know this is going to sound so basic. When you watch NFL practice, they're moving 7 yards at a time. They're exhausted all the time. Yeah. And when I was on that sideline, they're doing sprints and they're right in front of me and you could hear the huffing and puffing. And you don't realize that these guys are on edge all the time. They're at the total state of exhaustion because they're moving slowly. You don't realize how much they're exerting themselves, especially when they're sprinting. And so maybe is it one of these things where a player doesn't want an extra 15 yards, a player doesn't want to do an extra hustle play because it's August 8th. I don't know. I just know he's intense in practice. And I think that it's a really good way to kneecap him really early to say he can't run the level of intense practices that he wants. I think you do. I don't know if Eric Bieniemy is going to be successful as a play caller because he's going to have Sam Howell. He's going to have a bad offensive line, all of that stuff. But for a guy who's got a huge year ahead for his career, when he couldn't get a head coaching job and he's here to prove himself, to kneecap him like this from an intensity standpoint, I think is actually quite disappointing.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think, I don't think it was a calculated, he is working hard. You know, Ron Rivera was trying to send this message. I think he was, as you said, kind of just speaking off the cuff a little bit about stuff that's going on with his team. I do wonder, it does make me, you know, question a little bit about like, well, what kind of practices were they doing there before? Or, you know, a lot of those type of things. Like, I don't think it reflects very well on where that organization or where that football team has been. I think if you watch, you know, listen to Patrick Mahomes talk, stuff that he's said over the last few years. Watch sideline interactions between Patrick Mahomes and Eric Bieniemy over the years. Mm-hmm. It was not like the, you know, they have a lot of intense conversations. And I think a lot of the Chiefs coaches have had a pretty intense sideline demeanor with their players. Go back and watch scenes in the quarterback. Andy Reid specifically, like, didn't want to be a big part of the quarterback on Netflix, but there was more. You did see interactions with Bieniemy on the sidelines, particularly in it was the divisional round playoff game where Patrick hurt his knee/ankle. Mm-hmm. I guess it was his ankle. And a lot of really intense discussions between EB and Patrick Mahomes on the sidelines, a little confrontational. So, I mean, I think, you know, he's a guy who pushes really hard. And the Chiefs do have a reputation of having one of the most physical, intense training camps. Andy Reid is one of the last guys he operates within the CBA rules, but he pushes it all the way to the limit in terms of how much contact you have, how many hours you can have on the field. You know, St. Joe's is a miserable, I mean, it is one of the most old school training camp setups. It's basically St. Joe's and Latrobe for where the Steelers practice.
By the way, both of those coaches, they hit the shit out of each other there.
Yeah, I mean, they do. They actually hit in those practices. So I wonder
if there's another commonality between Mike Tomlin and Andy Reid. Something about winning a lot more games than they lose. I don't know.
Gold jackets in their future. Yeah, really well.
Almost with Ruiz. I've actually become, maybe because I spent too much time with Mike Vrabel, I've become so effort and execution pilled this month. Like, I'm so into it. I think it's because I've been talking a lot. Not with Vrabel, he would never do this sort of thing. But, like, a couple of coaches have just, like, told me about different, like, players who were not giving enough effort. Or, like, you know, this guy's, maybe it's just a confluence of guys where it's like, this guy didn't put in enough effort. And, like, this guy was loafing in a huge game, blah, blah, blah. And then I watched a couple of these guys and I'm just like, oh, right. Sometimes these guys are human and they just put zero effort into massive games. And now I'm just totally effort pilled.
Look, it's not so much different than editing a staff of NFL writers.
Well, I bring it, so.
So we'll have that discussion offline later. but the other question I had too is like, and even if it's not like the running backs like complaining in the way, like whining or whatever, but like if they're saying like, wow, we're running so many plays or the tempo is really fast, like have they watched the Chiefs? Like, have you watched the kind of offense that they run? Like, what tempo they play with and how many plays they run in a game and how much motion there is in a game? Like, there's a lot. And if you want to do that, and I have a lot of questions about if that's replicable, what they did in Kansas City with the Commanders' offensive personnel, all of those sorts of things. But, like, that's what you're getting. That's the type of scheme that he's trying to run. And, like, training camp sucks. And I will say, like, these guys, we're old. Like, do you remember like real 2-a-days when it was like 4 and 5 hour practices?
I was in college and I would go and I covered the Dolphins for 2 summers during 2-a-days and you would get there at like 9 a.m. You leave at like 6 p.m. and they would practice twice.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was
for
insane.
Like 2+ hours a time.
It was I'm actually writing a piece and there's someone in there who talks about how intense about how to sort of change your approach to practice. And they were talking about 2-a-days and like people would retire. People retire now, but like people would be like, I actually don't want to do the second practice. I'm going to go home and be.
Do you know my
man.
John Lynch story? Have I told you the John Lynch? Do you know the John
did
Lynch
go,
story?
Did he go Vontae Davis on us?
So 2008 training camp, it was my first year covering the Broncos. John Lynch was very veteran at that point. And he had kind of been told that he was still going to be like their starting safety there in that defense. But like Mike was trying to kind of like give him a little bit of a different role and maybe he wouldn't play quite as many snaps. And it was about 3 or 4 days into like real training camp. And he just went AWOL. Like John Lynch wasn't around. John Lynch, like, you know, now general manager of the San Francisco 49ers, but like, you know, team captain, the whole thing, you know, Captain America kind of guy. And like John Lynch doesn't just like disappear. So the fact that like John Lynch wasn't there, and this is like pre-social media, this is 2008. Nobody has Twitter at practice. We barely have cell phones. Mike Shanahan had a rule. Actually, Sheil and Ben Solak were talking about this on Extra Point Taken this morning about the ridiculous rules that some coaches have at training camp. One of Mike Shanahan's rules was that if you no cell phones on the sideline. So you couldn't make a call. And nobody was, I mean, people could text a little bit. And then once you left, you couldn't come back in. So like if you were a reporter covering a 2.5 hour practice and you needed to call your boss, if you left the gate, like you were done, like you couldn't watch the rest of the practice. So like there was no, it was just kind of like, where the hell is John Lynch? And we start doing all this like report, you know, trying to figure out where he is, asking other players and all this stuff. And it turned out he was just like, I'm out. I can't, like, I'm done. Like, I'm gonna go. And so he went home and a bunch of the guys from the team later in the day came and met him, and there were a lot of beers consumed. And then within a few hours, he was no longer a Denver Bronco. And so, yeah, people were retire. Hall of Famers, future general managers retire in the middle of training
camp. I also
feel,
and I only got a couple years of this, I also feel that pre-CBA, the fights were just way more insane.
Oh, I saw some insane ones. Yeah.
I saw one with, no one is going to remember these two guys. David Kirkus was the wide receiver.
Yeah,
was a Dolphins practice, and Will Allen, the cornerback, not the safety or the. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a bunch of Will Allens, right?
Miami Dolphins. That's my wheelhouse.
Yeah. It's like 2008, I think. And like they're just in coverage, and somehow like the helmet, one of the helmets come off, and they just started wailing on each other like a UFC fight. And you don't see that anymore. I think that they were so hot and angry because of the practice rules before the previous CBA. They were just like, I know anything that's going on here. And even like the early, I remember, the year before the CBA, I was covering a Jets practice, was the Hard Knocks team. And there was this guy, I think his name was Rob Turner, who would just, Rex would have him starting fights all the time. Like that was his thing. Like if practice got too boring, he would just start a fight. And I remember some guy, one of the players being like, oh yeah, Rob wants to be in the quarterback, the guard competition, whatever it was, the tackle competition. And he's like lashing out. And the solution was just start punching people. And you don't have, like I saw a fight between the Packers and the Bengals today. It's like a little bit of a skirmish. Dudes used to wail on each other.
Yeah, I saw, not to just turn this into like us old people talking about how the good old days.
Practice brawls are content.
They, the best one, or the best, I know, well, I have two, but the one that was like pre new CBA back in the really heavy days, it's actually on a season of Hard Knocks. It was that 2008 season. The Cowboys came to Denver for joint practices, and the Cowboys offensive line was huge and really nasty. Flozell Adams, and got into it with like basically everybody on the Broncos defensive line. And here's a name that you'll know. Some guy says being a Florida guy, Marcus Thomas. You remember Marcus Thomas? Oh yeah. And there was I can't even remember the rest of those guys, but there was a nasty fight, and Flozell Adams ripped one of the Broncos D linemen's helmets off and then swung it at him like as a weapon. And
there was,
it was
so
on,
much helmet swinging back then.
Yeah. And it was like on Hard Knocks. And I actually went back and like found it on YouTube a summer or two ago. We were having one of those like, do you remember this guy conversations with, because like a lot of the guys who played for that Broncos team are now like Broncos media members. And we had like a remember the good old days of training camp conversation. That was also the good old days of Hard Knocks when they actually like showed interesting shit.
I think the other problem is that there are less like really old guys along the lines because of the new CBA, because every team went younger. And now like I will tell you this, there's no doubt in my mind that the 2011 CBA killed the insane practice fight. Just like a punch, like less than five punches have landed in the past 12 years in August.
It was Travis
this is
Kelce,
what they stole
like
from us
2 weeks ago, right?
Yeah. All right. And then that crazy fight with the Raiders where they had to get on the bus immediately. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. I actually saw a really crazy Raiders Cowboys fight at joint practices there like 5 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
In Oxnard. It like spilled. It was like up. You know how they used to have like fences would like lean over the fences? It went into the fences and fans were like kind of trying to get in it.
Oh,
and fans had helmets that they were going to get signed, and they were
swinging helmets. All right, let's move on here. Brandon Staley says he visited
Steve
Kerr.
This is now a boxing podcast. Sorry.
Hey, 10 rounds. We already did it. Brandon Staley visited Steve Kerr on how to bounce back from a playoff loss. I gotta be honest with you, I didn't really understand this. So I read it. Breer had it. Somebody else had it a couple weeks ago. And then he gave the most expansive comments Staley did to Kay Adams on Wednesday or Tuesday. And they talked about Kerr, I guess, had talked a little bit about Popovich after Popovich's loss to Miami. And the whole thing, I guess, is just having stories to tell the players that they can relate to. In your experience, and Lord knows, I've not only sat through a lot of bullshit, but I've quoted guys uncritically on a lot of bullshit where I'm just like, I don't think this is going to help, but I do it anyway because it's good copy. It's just like this kind of stuff. Is this anything, Lindsey Jones?
I mean, the thing that I appreciated, I will say the thing that I think maybe is valuable to take from it is that at least he's acknowledging that, like, it's a thing that he's going to have to deal with.
Well, I think I thought the quote was interesting where he said he wanted to make sure that they knew that he was working as hard as they were to kind of get past it.
Yeah, because I think there's a lot of coaches, at least like publicly or forward facing, that would be like, well, that was last year. This team is, you know, this is a new year. It's a new team. We're not worrying about what happened last year. The past is the past. We're over it. When we all know that they're not, and that it's like a big thing that's hanging over a lot of these teams and these coaches. So the fact that at least he's not like hiding from it, and that he's not hiding his team from the fact that they lost in one of the most horrifying, embarrassing fashions last year, I think that's positive. But I don't, you know, I just don't know if there's like a right answer of like, oh, here's the silver bullet that's going to get you over that type of loss.
Yeah. So
I mean, it's like guys try stuff all the time.
Yeah, no, I'm fine with it. I don't think it's going to help, but it's not going to hurt. I don't think that, like,
yeah,
it's just a thing to do. And if it breaks through to one guy, great. And like, it's just a fun thing to do in June and July when you have nothing on the calendar. Here's the problem that the Chargers face. I think that the Falcons, after the 28-3, which was significantly worse because they win the damn Super Bowl. And that's when that means more contract money. That means security. That means never have to buy a beer again in Atlanta. Like, it means so many things, right? They made a big old show about being over it. Remember that?
Yeah. Did you go to that camp?
Oh, I went to it.
Yeah.
Big old show.
I was there opening day of that camp.
They were so, they couldn't have been more over it. They've set the record for being over it. Okay. 5 years later, 6 years later, wherever it is, you talk to anybody associated with the game, not over it for a second.
Never were over it.
Have
still are not over it.
A beer and a half, and they start talking about it. Have not even a beer and a half. Just like tee them up and they'll go. There's nothing that you can do to close that door unless you win another Super Bowl or win a Super Bowl in some cases.
Yeah.
And I'll do one better. If Dan Quinn wins a Super Bowl as DC, and he's won it, I believe he's won a Super Bowl with Seattle, or he's at least been in the mix. I don't think it's going to feel the same because he was the head coach. And again, like, I think you never get over that unless you have an unbelievable run of success. And that's almost incidental. Everybody says, oh, you can use this to fuel you. I don't know. It's pretty damn hard. And you're in an AFC now with not only a stacked division, but a stacked conference, to where I wouldn't guarantee anything as far as the playoffs go. And this could be Brandon Staley's last ride. And he's going to look back on that. I think that in the back of your head, you're always thinking, if I'd close that out, would I be on the hot seat now? And there's nothing you can do to close that chapter. I just know too many teams that have done this for me to think that they can get over it now.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier, thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
All right, Johnny Manziel. Johnny Manziel's Netflix documentary came out. He says there's a couple of things here. He said he watched zero film, which is what I wanted to talk about. His dad faked a heart attack for him to get out of the combine, so he went to take a drug test. It is also indicated that maybe he did not take his own drug tests. Don't know about that. Put that off to the side for a second. His receivers are so hungover at a workout that Manziel's lawyer and agent ran routes and apparently did okay. Okay. But let's harp on the zero film thing. Is college football in the hot seat because they let Johnny Manziel run all over him when he didn't actually study anything?
And he was so fun that season, 10 years ago, I guess.
Two seasons.
Well, and that's what's like kind of just like wild about the whole Johnny Manziel experience is because like he was so electric as a college player. And I think he was just this like enigma that he was so successful so quickly that he kind of had his own rules and could do whatever he wanted. I have not watched the Manziel documentary yet. I'm very much looking forward to. I'm also very much looking forward to the University of Florida Swamp King ones that's coming out in 2 weeks or so. Because these are both stories that I was around pretty intense, like programs and players that I was around a lot as a reporter. I spent a lot of time in Cleveland in 2014. And you heard a lot of these, like, Johnny's a mess and you could see the stuff that Johnny was a mess, but everybody was going out of their way to protect him. And he was clearly not going to be honest with any of this stuff. But like the people who are around those teams, I think were just, I think a little like shell shocked about just what a disaster he was. But like, I mean, I remember at the time being like, how did the Browns mess this up so badly? But then you realize, It's the Browns.
So there was one insane thing that came from the doc, which is that so anyone who follows college football is aware of the legend / reported information that Johnny Manziel comes from a wealthy oil family. Did you see this information that came out in the doc? So it's like a thing that like he had nothing to worry about. He's kind of a brat because he comes from tons of money. Which I felt like I'd seen a lot of photos of him like playing nice golf courses and like he's with his family and everybody looks well dressed. And I'm saying, okay, the oil thing probably makes money. What actually happened is that his friend who went by Uncle Nate, there's your first red flag. A person your own age is going by Uncle. He was just laundering the autograph money through his grandfather, and then they just made up a story about oil wells, which is just, it's like the, for me, like reading like message board gossip from 15 years ago, 10 years ago, that to me is like the Manti Te'o story.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just excited. Like, it's just interesting that he just like completely opened up. And I think the Netflix folks were a bit surprised of just like how revealing he was going to be. His agent, Eric Burkhard, was also, I believe, very revealing about their dealings. And I remember, I mean, I'm sure you had this stuff too, of dealing with Eric Burkhard during all of the Johnny Manziel drama and trying to figure out what's going on. And at one point they actually kind of like split up because Johnny needed help. And then
And then he went to Rosenhaus, and Rosenhaus
and Rosenhaus is like, I can't, I'm out. Yeah, I mean, it was bad. But yeah, I mean, like I've said, this, not for this to just be like a let's reminisce about all of our old reporting experiences, but I was in Cleveland the night he got drafted. And not because I knew they were going to draft Johnny Manziel, but I was there because they had two top 10 picks and they needed a quarterback. And I was able to get access to the people there and spent, you know, did a lot of interviews and, remember being in the draft room as their jump, and they were moving all over the place. They ended up taking Justin Gilbert, who was like huge bust of a cornerback, actually, yeah, before Johnny. They traded all over the place. And I remember getting a little bit of time, one-on-one time with Johnny Manziel the day after the draft when he flew in, and, you know, 7 or 8 minutes, you know, nothing actually meaningful. But then I kind of followed him around a bit. And that spring, I went out to the NFLPA rookie premiere. Did you ever do that event? Did you ever go to that event?
I did.
So it's with the year that I did it with that class, it was at the Coliseum. It was in, like, you know, they stayed in West Hollywood. And of course, Johnny was getting followed by the paparazzi all over the place and, you know, was being followed to these like nightclubs and, you know, paparazzi photos of him the night before they were supposed to be at this big event. And Johnny was so hungover the morning that they had to do the big thing for this. It's like the NFLPA where they debut their uniforms, and it's a big like promotional thing, and they have all the trading cards are there, and it's the first time you get to see the guys in their uniforms. And Johnny was so hungover, like barely functional hungover. And rather than doing all the stations and the it's photo shoots and all this kind of stuff, he laid under a folding table and with just like on the grass. I have photos of it. Like it was bizarre. And like to the point now, what was the Clemson quarterback?
Taj Boyd. He played,
yes. Who had like big personality. Never was like a good
NFL. Jets.
Jets, yes. And so he was doing the like, I'm gonna like interview all the other guys do the bits. And he went over to try to interview to talk to Johnny while Johnny was laying on the grass under a table because he was like so hungover, maybe still wasted. I don't know. At this point, like I feel like everything is on the table, possibly. He's put it all out there. And all he did, Johnny, was because there was a tablecloth over the table. Which is how he got a little shade and privacy or whatever. And so Taj is asking him questions. I don't even remember what the questions were. And all Johnny did was stick his hand up and gave him either a thumbs up or a thumbs down to answer. So somewhere buried in the depths, the 9-year-old files on photos on my iPhone is a Johnny laying under the table doing like a thumbs up or a thumbs down. So Netflix, if you do a sequel, hit me up. I've got some stories, but like
what
you
era. Knew,
I mean, it was just a mess, but you know,
here's my problem on that. You hear about a lot of guys who are messes and then you go, all right, I'm going to short this guy. And it actually takes longer than you think for that to catch up. Mm-hmm. First of all, there is no correlation between not to put this. What time someone goes to bed and how sober they go to bed and coaching success. Like that's number one, right? Because you hear about some coaches where it's just like they just max out. They're out at the bars till 3 a.m. And then it's like, all right, well, they're also just winning games. So what are you going to do? So that there's that part of it. And the second part of it is just like, again, like you hear there's certain players where you hear him, you know, this guy does not eat right. He doesn't live right. He doesn't, you know, he's out every night and just like, all right, whatever. Maybe, you know, keep an eye on it. And then they have great 10-year careers and they learn how to manage it. At the end of the day, these guys are 20 somethings, just like any industry in America. And some guys deal with it better than others. Some guys deal with stress better than others, all that stuff. Like Manziel is a interesting case. I think that Manziel could have gotten away with a hell of a lot more from an off the field standpoint if he simply studied the game.
5 hours of film, maybe.
He did no effort into actually being good. Some of these guys are like, I'm actually just going to party my ass off, but I'm also going to work hard at football. And they end up in like a nice little middle ground. A lot of these guys say, hey, you know what? If I'm good at football, that's going to give me money to buy more booze. And then the whole thing takes off. Once they make that transaction, or just like the vacations in Cabo, not necessarily the booze, because you can get free booze, but like you can take nice vacations and party if you're good at football. And that is the most valuable lesson. I should go to the rookie premiere and tell you guys, if you're going to party, be good at football. That's the number one, my number one thing. Or put a pin in the partying for 4.5 years and get a second contract and then mail it in. Always an option. All right. Last thing, Vikings non-committal on Kirk Cousins. So this is funny. So his ownership came out. Mark Wolf said he's non-committal about it. We'll leave it to the GM, Kwezi. I don't know how much of a headline this is because they already waffled on the contract. The contract, they didn't extend him. So yeah, of course they're going to be non-committal. They didn't extend him.
Well, I mean, I think one of the like underrated storylines of this year is just going to be like the next phase of quarterback movement. And what next offseason is going to look like, and the way that Kirk Cousins has always kind of been out there as the prototypical quarterback, the guy that Kyle Shanahan loves, and then given how far-reaching the tentacles of the Kyle Shanahan offense is throughout the NFL, that if he were to become a free agent, how many guys in the league would be like, oh yeah, I'd love to work with that guy, and what the market for Kirk Cousins is going to look like. But yeah, we're at silly season for news right now, where we'll see a lot of these type of headlines, but I do think it's real that there's going to be some very interesting what's going to happen with our Kirk Cousins once the season is over stuff. Something we'll be talking season about unless this you're- year.
We're in silly season unless it's the Commanders, in which case Ron Rivera is randomly saying that a coach is being too hard on his players. There will be a massive bidding war for Kirk Cousins because the dominant offensive force in this league is run by coaches who adore Kirk Cousins. Mm-hmm. So he's become a meme, and I think people see him a little bit as a joke. The people who control purse strings do not see him as a joke.
Yeah.
There's a reason he's made a lot of money, and he will be extremely coveted, even if he's like plays B plus this year. So that's it. All right, we're done. Your daughter's been stomping in and out of the room. She needs some attention. I'm 24 hours away from giving my son a lot of attention. Thank you to Richie Bozick. It's been Slow News Day on the Ringer Podcast Network.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.